Welcome to the Women's Success Summit, brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce to you the top poet in the world, Mr. Fox Meyer. Fox, would you take it from here?
Tanya, thank you. Those are very kind words, too kind, but I will take them and run with them. Hello, everybody. My name is Fox Meyer. As Tanya said, I'm a speaker, an author, a teacher, a poet and a coach. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today about my story and the strong female influences within my story. And it's a little bit of, it's about an upcoming book called Life as I Have Known It. So go along this ride with me if you would. It's 6 a.m. and the alarm clock on my iPad mini goes off. While I am grateful for this gift from my Somerset Patriot family, I know the alarm clock on this iPad mini is not its primary intended use, so naturally I want to punch it. But I don't. But what I do is I hit snooze twice in the next 10 minutes. And then eventually I hear Coach Tanner's words in my head, "Off your ass and on your feet, gotta get up so he can eat." And I oblige. I begin to put my right leg and foot on the ground. And as I do this, I see a scar on my right hip. It goes all the way down my hip, and it's product of a 1984 and 1988 hip osteotomy surgery, in which metal rods were placed in both of my hips, and my bones turned out, all in the effort and hope that I'd walk less knock-kneed. Well, the next thing that happens is my left foot hits the ground and my knees kiss together for the first of many times today. CP is relentless. When it pushes, I pull. When I pull, it pushes. Captive of my body, this thing has got me sitting here in this chair, and so begins the unfair. Thought so by some, blind, deaf, and dumb, and did he hear that sound, and how is he getting around? Listen, my crossed eyes gave me x-ray vision in disguise. From my first ectomy to my last otomy, my scars are my gift. I begin to walk to the bathroom to shower. I pick my feet up just high enough up off the ground so I don't fall and trip flat on my face. And each step carries with it a memory. This time I can hear the sound a morphine machine makes after a 1990 hamstring transfer surgery, injecting morphine goodness into my sliced body. I enter the bathroom. I climb into the shower, and I mean climb. I don't step into the shower. I climb into it, holding on to things more than gently because I've had many tumbles in my life. Today I want to keep my teeth. I shower and I bathe and I see all my scars. Each one carries with it a memory. Heel cord extension, hip osteotomy, hamstring transfer, testicle removal, chest tube. I towel off. I climb out of the shower. Again, climb, not step out. Because today I want to keep my teeth and I've had many tumbles in my life. As you know, I groom myself. And the last thing that I do in the bathroom here is I put contact lenses into my eyes. When I do this, I am reminded that I cannot focus on a single object with both eyes at the same time. Why? Well, it's about being born cross-eyed. Various surgeries and a baseball accident at my grandmother's house. I step back in the mirror. It's 6:30 in the a.m., and the snooze has become my friend. Soon I see myself in the mirror. He looks back at me and says, "Have you done all you can do? And are you ready for what is to come? Are you thankful for all you have been given? As would say, decent son, do you realize responsibility that comes with the pleasure of success? You must be a man of integrity to always be at your best. And no matter there are no cameras, and that you are alone under this roof, you can hide sometimes from the outside world. Could I always see the truth? I walk out of the bathroom, again, picking up my feet just high enough up off the ground, not to fall flat on my face. And each step carries with it, again, a memory. This time, it's 1988. I'm at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital in New York City. I have just had my hip osteotomy surgery. Although my hips and legs are broken, my muscles are sliced, my legs are not bandaged yet, or not casted yet. They're only bandaged all the way down. It's 2 days post-surgery, and my surgeon, Dr. Harold M. Dick, says, "Hey, Fox, it's time to put weight on your feet." With my dad holding me from behind, I take my first steps post-surgery. And while it's very hard to describe the pain that came with each step, it is impossible to describe the euphoria of walking again. I get into my bedroom to dress myself. As a general rule, getting dressed takes me 4 times as long as it would for the average bear. No big deal. The hardest part, however, is putting on and tying my shoes. I do it with my left foot with hardly any problems. The right foot is much more difficult. And as I do this, I turn to my right, and I can see my neighbor in our parking lot of our condo complex. Well, he bends and ties his shoe in 2 seconds flat. Then I turn to my left, and I can picture my mother telling me as a kindergartner, "Fox, you have CP, you walk funny, that's it, get over it." Blunt and to the point, but she has a point. I can't help but think in this moment each morning about the thousands of people who have it harder than me for thousands of reasons. Take Andre, for instance. Andre was my roommate in rehab after a surgery in 1990. At 21 years old, Andre was given a motorcycle for his birthday. He took it out for a spin without a helmet on. He went over a patch of wet leaves. He spun out, and the first thing he hit was his head. Andre was a head trauma. He lost all access to his long-term and short-term memory. And as my roommate back in 1990, he was prone to very violent mood swings that were also profane, and many of them were directed in the way of his mother. One day, his mother would walk in, and he'd be all lovey-dovey, kissing on her and hugging on her the entire day. The next day, he'd ask me, "Who is this B-I-T-C-H trying to enter the room?" And he'd lock her out of the room. There was Jerry, at 16 years old, living in Manhattan in New York City. Jerry went out on his bicycle in the middle of the day to get some groceries for his mother. On his way there, Jerry was struck by a drunk cab driver. And now, like Andre, Jerry became a head trauma. Without any access to his long-term or short-term memory, he was prone to violent mood swings, many of them, again, directed toward his mother. So looking at me, sure, I can tie my shoes. I do this. I stand up, my knees kiss together. I stare straight ahead at the wall, and I think about all the times today the perception of me is going to get morphed and mixed up with the actual reality. I picture myself in the 7th grade. In physical education class, we have just run around the track and are timed in doing so. We get back to the boys' locker room, and a classmate of mine is going around comparing his times around the track with theirs. He gets to me, I begin to say my time, and he says, "Fox, you don't count." In this moment, I stand up straighter and I say, "Don't tell me what I can and cannot do. To my image, I am defiant. What you see is so far from true because I'm a mental giant. Yes, I'm frail, built like and nicknamed Scarecrow, but inside, what a lot do not know, I have been broken and welded so many times. I can't tell you this, no matter how hard I try. Misjudged book and misread cover, I'll tell you what lies under. My toes, they are curled, my body wants to go fetal. because in my life I have seen so many needles. I pick up my legs to run, you know, like kids do for fun. But I've got to be careful because every step could lead to a tumble. This I can't forget. In front of my face, my eyes, specs for years they can't disguise. My pupils are never in sync, no matter how hard I try and think. But don't tell me what I can and cannot do. To my image, I am defiant. What you see is so far from true. I'm a mental giant. I walk to get my keys and belongings to leave for work. I pick up my feet just high enough up off the ground, not to trip and fall flat on my face. Each step carries with it a memory. This time it's 2 days post-hamstring transfer surgery in 1990. I'm lying in a hospital bed, my body sliced from the surgery and spasming. When my surgeon, Dr. Roy M. Nizzo, walks into the room. He's dressed in plaid from head to toe, and he's doing all these coordination exercises like patting his head while rubbing his stomach and vice versa. He gets to me and asks me, "Fox, how are you doing? All right? You're making great progress." As he asks me this question, my body goes into spasm, and I feel as if like I'm taken all the way to the ceiling and back down again. And I have never told a bigger lie in my life when I said, "Yeah, Doc, I'm doing great." I walk out the door. The first thing I have to do to get to my car, which sits in a garage, is go down a flight of stairs. Stairs, for someone with CP, are not easy. I hate stairs. Again, as I get to the edge of them, I can't help but think of the thousands of people in this world that have it harder than me for thousands of reasons. Take Reggie, for instance. He was my roommate in rehab. At 14 years old, Reggie stole a car. He drove it into a telephone pole. He sat in front of me, paralyzed from the waist down. There was Michael, at 15 years old, my roommate. He walked into his parents' bedroom one night and said, "Mom, Dad, I have a headache." Michael passed out right there. He had a brain aneurysm. So back in those days, as my roommate, he lied in front of me, 15 years old, in a diaper, unable to speak, unable to move, in a coma. So yeah, I think I can get down these stairs. I hold on the rails to keep from flying. Man, you know I ain't lying. Sometimes I laugh to keep from crying. Legs entangled, knees entangled, feet so entangled. I get into my car. This time, right leg first. I can't see the scars because, of course, I'm wearing a pair of slacks. I back out of my garage, begin to drive to work. Somewhere along the line to my drive to work, I make a left-hand turn. And when I do this, a baseball that sits in my glove in my trunk rolls out and begins to bounce around my trunk. I think of that baseball and I think of all the places that ball has taken me. Thousands of hours of playing baseball in the backyard with my family. Thousands of hours of throwing a baseball up at a beach, off a school, in a park somewhere. Over 100 innings pitched in high school. In the summer of 1997, I threw out the ceremonial first pitch to a New York Yankees game. Somehow, some way, that baseball got me to the University of South Carolina, where I spent 2 years as a team manager and 3 as a student assistant coach. And in 2000 and 2002, we were SEC champions. In 2002, we made an appearance at the College World Series. We were the nation's runners-up that year. Somehow, some way, that baseball has gotten me to Bridgewater, New Jersey, where for the last 11 years, I have served as the bench coach for the Somerset Patriots, a professional baseball team in the Atlantic League, where in 2008, 9, and 15, we were league champions. I am so grateful that throwing a baseball has had nothing to do with how quickly I get dressed. Good Evening Arena sold out with doubters. I stand before you completely empowered. I'm so excited to hear the volume of deafening silence coming from this room. Don't tell me I have no chance. I know your stance. You have the bat and I have the ball. Double or nothing and once and for all. This battle, it wasn't close. You thought me a loser and you misdiagnosed. I pull into the parking lot of Whippany Park High School. For a second, my mind drifts off. I'm sitting at a beach, and the alarm clock on my iPad mini doesn't go off. It's that I have to get up. Why? Because I have to go pee. I look behind me and I see my parents' beach condo about a quarter mile away, and I look in front of me, the ocean just feet within my grasp. I stand up, my knees kiss together, and I tell myself, well, the whole world's a bathroom. I pull into my parking space. I get out of my car. This time, left leg first, then right. I begin to walk toward the entrance of the school. Each step carries with it a memory. Step, your idol no more. Step, pick yourself up off the floor. Step, get up out of your seat. Step, you will not lie there in defeat. Step, in mind and body, a winning tranquility. Step, because without movement, there is no possibility. Step, each pace equals a seed. Step, in the world's largest sequoia tree. Step, one by one, they will amass. Step, Coorfield passes down victory path. As I begin to enter the school, I can see myself in a door's reflection. And as I see this, I am amazed at, no matter how old I get, I'm a man 5'8" tall, and I have never, ever bought a pair of pants that actually fit me. I open the door for a couple of female colleagues, and I am amazed at the amount of bags they are carrying, because for me, as you've probably heard, walking without anything is a conscious act of will, and so the less I have, the more worry-free I am. I enter the school building. I see so many students trying to be cool, and negative echoes of my high school experience ring in my head. I hear things like crippled creep and you don't look like a senior. I look around, I see these students, and I realize that regardless of the curriculum and content I'm ordered to teach, my main job is to make them realize that from the moment they were conceived, all of my students were genetically designed to be different. So why on earth would you try to act like somebody you're not? Are you trying to stand out? Sure, your twin is out there, no doubt. They wear what you wear and they do what you do. Your carbon copy, nothing new. But let me ask you this. Do they have your tone, your heartbeat, your mission? Remember, it's impossible to measure what lies within, because with so many similar variables, remember how you are made. Have no fear, people. Your individuality is saved. I pass the auditorium, and for a second, I look in it. It was a place where in the seventh grade, I was chasing around a girl I had a crush on. I fell flat on my face. So in this moment, I look at my hands and I think of my therapists over the years. Thank you, Debbie. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Mrs. Schumler. Thank you, Jose. You see, these people knew that as a kid growing up with CP, I was going to fall every day of my life. It was inevitable. And so it was imperative that I put my hands out in front of me as I fall, because 99.9% of my falls were forward. I look at my hands again. I think of my therapists again. My hands have been there for me over the years. In 1997, when I said I threw up a ceremonial first pitch to a New York Yankees game, I fell on the top step of the dugout. In 1997, in the fall of that year, as a freshman at the University of South Carolina, while talking to my good friend Brett, he was inviting me to his family's house for Thanksgiving dinner when I fell forward, and my hands were there for me. In 2002, during the player introduction to the College World Series, yes, again, I fell on the top step of the dugout. Forward, my hands were there. I look at my hands and I realize this. My life has not been about not trying to fall every day. It's been about always trying to get back up. And that my life has been less about pain and more about beauty. I enter my classroom for the first time this day. And I could see two things in my eye's path. Wires, entangled wires and crumbs. I look at my knees and see how they kiss and they relate to the entangled wires and crumbs. And I chuckle for a minute. And then I think of my dad. For 17 years, Dad was involved in the fire protection business. And I can recall him telling me a number of times, Fox, the number one cause of kitchen fires, you guessed it, is entangled wires and crumbs. I chuckle. I look outside to a baseball field. And I think of a time where I could have used some actual fire. It was 1995. I was playing right field during a JV baseball game. It was so cold outside, people, that if I stopped moving, I wouldn't be able to move at all. But I had a fire. A fire to pitch, and I wanted to do it every single day. Well, in the fifth inning of this game, I got my chance. Coach Irvin waved me in. One small problem. It had nothing to do with my entangled gait. My glove hand, my right hand, was frozen into a fist, and I was having a hard time keeping my glove on it. Coach Irvin gave me the ball. I called my best friend at the time, Luke, over and explained to him the situation. For about a half minute, Luke struggled to jiggle the glove on my right hand. But it was time. I had a fire. I had to pitch. I was at my best when I felt my worst. Never did I moan, cry, or pout. About my it, my uncontrollable thirst, about my it, I had no doubt. Ante up, the chips are down, they got me one time there, lucky. About my it, it had no sound. Next time around, I was the goods, I was the money. You ask me, was it in my food? No, the it was my attitude. The bell rings. First period begins. As my students enter the room and I greet them, I think how much I want to trade my age for theirs. With one small stipulation, I would not want to be as dumb as I was when I was their age. I'm in seventh grade, Mrs. Brockett's history class, and I excuse myself to use the bathroom. And I use this time to steal money out of a friend's locker. I turn the knob, 17, 24. And I get that money just so I can have lunch out of the school cafeteria. Retrospect, it always tells the truth. Retrospect, now I see clearly my youth. Retrospect, I was young and I was dumb. Retrospect, or just a kid having fun. Retrospect, dear God, why did I wear that hat? Retrospect, why did I get angry over that? Retrospect, Mom and Dad, this place, I'm sick of it. Retrospect, Mom and Dad, you're right, now I miss it. Retrospect, I was always looking for something more. Retrospect now with the time and the place that I most adore. Retrospect, time goes by way too fast. Retrospect, I am so glad to still have a past. Class begins. I am a grammarian at heart. I'm all about verbs, adverbs, indirect object pronouns, direct object pronouns. But I know it doesn't work for everybody and that syntax does not equal intelligence. But right now, it's not working for anybody. Everyone is not paying attention. Everyone is on their phones. We have all been sucked in by this technology revolution, including me. Cell phones, tablets, and notebooks took the world so forcefully it shook. With all these new technologies, to the world were born more bad apologies. Wi-Fi might seem to connect and tie, but it so too began the great divide. Social media looks like a brilliant disguise, but anybody with a soul can read between the lines. Cell phones, tablets, and notebooks took the world so forcefully it shook. With all these new technologies, to the world were born more bad apologies. You see, what good does it do when a student Snapchats with somebody in my class from China? Because they do that for 141 days in a row, they have no idea the name of the student in front of them, behind them, to the left, and to the right. I step back in the aisle. I slip and fall on a piece of paper, this time on my back. I'm okay, but angry, because I see this piece of paper. It's today's assignment, it's blank. It was due 15 minutes ago. I want to scream. I can't. The question becomes, how do I show my character? I get up. I get up slowly. And I get up for those that can't. The bell rings. It's the end of third period, and I have to step out to use the men's room. Again, I pick my feet up just high enough up off the ground, not to trip and fall flat on my face. As I enter the hallway, I'm passed by a colleague. He says, "Fox, how are you doing? Good?" I think to myself, not a single second of this day has gone how I planned it. But in my best moment, yeah, I've never been all right. So it made sense to me when I said, yeah, I'm doing great. I enter the boys' bathroom. And it strikes me how much this place looks like the boys' locker room of John A. Holmes High School in Edenton, North Carolina, where in the year 2000, I was an assistant coach my good friend Stuart Lake in the Edenton Steamers, a collegiate team in the Coastal Plain League, where that season I led the league in one category and one category alone. I got in full uniform before anybody did any game the entire season. I can recall a game that we had in Durham that year. Durham is 7 hours from Edenton. We had a 7 o'clock game and the bus left at 10 o'clock in the morning. And you can bet by 9:30 a.m. I was in full uniform. I got on the bus and I passed our head coach, my great friend, Stuart Lake. And he said, "There goes FUF, FUF, F period, U period, F period," an acronym standing for Full Uniform Fox. I stare into the mirror. I look at myself and I am amazed at the disconnect between my body and my mind. You see, my body just wants to go fetal and curl up, but my mind, Fox Spire, all I want to do is stand up straight. Another drag, a chance, while I adapt, advance, this present tense makes no sense. Out there, there has to be an answer. The bell rings again. It is the end of fourth period. It's time for lunch. While I would love to eat lunch in my room in peace, I can't because it's far too hot in there. So I grab my lunch and I meander to a cafeteria lunchroom down the hallway, which no one sits in. Again, I pick my feet up, just high enough up off the ground, not trip and fall flat on my face. I do my left foot with hardly any problems, but you can actually hear my right foot drag on the ground. On the edge of catastrophe, a one-time everyday calamity. God bless my friends and my family, but my gait just does not want to work. Somehow, some way, I make it to the cafeteria without any problems. And when I do this, I stare at the cafeteria lunch line. I see all the food that's offered there. Chicken fingers, French fries, macaroni and cheese, and chocolate chip cookies. And then I look at my lunch, cottage cheese with a Clif Bar. And I think of myself and my cerebral palsy. You see, one of the great things about having spastic CP is that muscles shake in my body 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And while a lot of times this is painful, frustrating, and confusing, and makes me very, very tight, I burn calories 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And over time, I've kept a healthy weight and stayed thin. So this skinny fat dude throws his cottage cheese and Clif Bar away and goes for comfort. My stomach is a bottomless pit. Sure, I'll eat that. I don't care about it. And I can eat more than a horse and throw peanut butter on pizza without remorse. Hi, I'm a skinny fat dude. In spite of all this food and beer, I turn sideways and I disappear. Hi, I'm a skinny fat dude. But then, people, I lift my shirt and I'm attacked by the empty sight of my one pack. Hi, I'm a skinny fat dude. And my muscles are like wet newspaper. And so when I flex, all the girls say is, see you later. Hi, I'm a skinny fat dude. Well, this skinny fat dude sits down, has lunch. The faculty lunchroom with my good friend John. John's been a janitor at Liberty Park High School for the last 8 years. And this day he tells me he's going in for heart surgery tomorrow. The third heart surgery he's had in his life. And that reminds me that we can buy a lot of things in this life, but we can't buy time. Lunch ends and I have finished my cafeteria gut bomb. I make a right-hand turn into the hallway. Again, I pick my feet up just high enough up off the ground, not trip and fall flat on my face. I'm being passed by people on my left and on my right. A colleague comes by, slaps me on the caboose and says, Magellan, get out of the middle of the road. By the way, go the speed limit. Speed limit. I think my mind drifts back. I'm a freshman at the University of South Carolina. It's a Wednesday. I get up. I walk to the Roost cafeteria to have breakfast. And then it's on to Bates, where I pass there and go to the Black Pea Center and lift weights. I walk up past South Quad and I go to four straight one-hour classes. Get back, throw down a quick lunch, jump on the shuttlecock, and I go back to Sarge Fry Field, where we have fall baseball practice. And I am completely and totally exhausted at this point. But even back then, Coach Tanner knew me. He knew how to push my buttons. He could see I was exhausted. He said, hey, Stumpy, I bet you can't throw the speed limit. In a huff and in anger, I grabbed one of our assistant coaches and I throw to him off the mound. For the record, I did throw the speed limit, people. If, of course, the speed limit is 55 miles an hour. I'm at my room. It's just minutes before sixth period is to begin. iPad power 15%, computer power 25%, phone power 7%. I am an absolute mess. But then I recall what Robert Andino told me in the batting cage just a few short years ago. We all have screws loose. We've all felt lower than low. We just can't keep the mind shift off the word go. Our elevators might not go to the top floor when we're done, all we want is more. We've all been neck deep in alligators. When they're right in front of us, there sits the elevator. We all have screws loose, people. Not a few, not many, but all. If we didn't, we wouldn't be normal. It's eighth period. It's the end of the day. I'm exhausted, and so are my students. And the word eight rings in my head. Eight, five more than my older brother's number in high school, and three more than my younger brother's number in high school. Four less than my sister's number in high school, and one less than Bordeaux's number in college. Bordeaux, Ryan Bordenick, was our catcher at the University of South Carolina my freshman year. And that year, as the team's manager and bat boy, I used to pray that with nobody on base, we'd give up a ground ball to third base, because if that happened, Bordeaux would go back up first base, losing his mask and skullcap in the process. And I would run out to pick it up. I love to run. I come back. I'm in class. Truth of the matter is, my freshman year at the University of South Carolina was almost 20 years ago. And Karen Tanner is right when she told me, life is short, people, but the days are long. It takes and it teaches. We see it tick away from the bleachers. It passes and amasses, as shown by the lines on my face, on clocks and on watches, the same amount each day allotted. We are late, we are early, and we are hurried by the hands never replaced. As a young buck, I saw my future clear with visions of grandeur, oh dear, from penthouse to outhouse, all mine. I was just lied to by time. I pick up my right arm. There's a sweat stain on my right armpit, and I know below that sweat stain is a scar in the shape of an X, where, in October of 1978, upon my birth, a chest tube was inserted in me to keep me alive. I can't help but think of Willie. Willie was my roommate at Children's Specialized Hospital in 1990. You see, at 15 years old, Willie just stopped breathing, reason undiagnosed. But Willie, talking to him, you see, he had a respirator put in him in the same exact spot as did with me. Willie, although he was put in this position, spoke to me with a complete smile on his face all the time. Shortly after I left Children's Specialized Hospital, Willie passed away. The bell rings. I've survived. My students have. I look up into the sky and I think of Willie. Again, I know we can buy a lot of these things in life, but again, we can't buy time. Even though the school day has ended, my work is far from done. As I stare straight ahead, I see pencils, entangled desks, papers, pens in my path. And as I go to clean my room, I picture it spotless. There is nothing that frees my mind more without a doubt than going through my house and throwing things out. Tuesdays and Fridays, I am freed from material prison as I go through my house and throw classroom and throw pens, pencils, and papers in the respectable bins. I walk along the hallway and profanity I mutter. I see classrooms, my classroom, in endless clutter. But I look to my left and I smile. I see an accounting class with paper neatly piled. I submitted my Christmas list to Mom and she said, Fox, you need that football league. You need a hole in the head. Looking back at my life, if doing it again, I'd wake up and suit up and be a garbage man. A pack rat or a quarter, I am not. But to me, zero adds up to a lot. I lock the door to my room, begin to exit the building. Again, as I do this, again, I pick my feet up, just high enough up off the ground, not to trip and fall flat on my face. As I'm walking out the school building, I am tapped on the shoulder by a student. I turn around and she says, "Prof, I read your book in the library today. I really liked it. I think I'm going to buy a copy." Just when I have given up all hope, I look into the eyes of someone who is the reason I continue to be a teacher. I can picture myself as a sophomore in high school with my head down in study skills class. And Mr. Ranger knocks on the door. He's my language arts teacher. I look up and he just gives me the thumbs up, just making sure that I'm okay. I walk out in the parking lot with my knees kissing together and I have a small tumble. My hands are there again. I get up and a colleague rolls down her window and says, "Young man, are you okay? I've never been all right, but I intend to give every day my best." After 12 years of classroom teaching, I realized that I have had great adult models in my life, and that, again, being a great adult model is my main job. And so, here is what I have learned from the great female adult models in my life. In the 10th grade, I enrolled in earth science. And during that time and in that class, I ran over one day and opened a door for my classmates. Our teacher, Mrs. Fedler, looked at me and commented, "Wow, Fox, you're really fast." I think what she meant to say was, "Wow, Fox, you're a lot faster than I thought you'd be." Some 10 years later, I came back to my high school alma mater to do my student teaching. Mrs. Fedler was there, still there, finishing a long teaching career. And while I was there, we had a few conversations. And her last words to me were less complimentary and more cautionary. As she said, "Fox, this does not get any easier." Now, she was my teacher, my mentor. I was her student. We were in a school building. But I know she was talking as much about teaching as she was about life. Start the bar high and raise it. Stretch yourself to the limit so much you can't take it. Whatever you're facing, it's in trouble. Anything you do, it's on the double. In your mind, the finish line is clear. Find your demons and toss them your fears. Ready, set, on your mark. You've got the keys, people, and you are double parked. Ready yourself for the ultimate spectacle. Strap it on and create your own miracles. Be the best human you ever knew. A story all could aspire to. People, every day, as Mrs. Fedler said, go beyond the beyond. That's it, I thought. Mrs. Fedler was talking about drive or motivation. As a kid, growing up with CP like most, I have had many surgeries to correct my crooked walk. And the surgery only gets you halfway to the finish line. The other requires you to learn how to walk again, which can be painful, confusing, frustrating, and downright fulfilling in the end. The question then becomes, from whom did I acquire the attitude that it takes to get there? Well, during a recent conversation I had with my brother Nick, I was explaining to him that in spite of all the qualities that our parents possess, I have acquired none of their skills. He stopped me in mid-conversation and said, "Fox, you acquired their drive." And then he proceeded to tell me how much I reminded him of our mother. Our mother, our father, our parents have dedicated their lives to making sure that we are okay. And that's amazing. Thank you, Mom and Dad. They give it their all and they do it to no end. They get up the next day and they do it again. They tell themselves before they get started, there is no reason to do this half-hearted. Their words, their deeds, their actions, their own. Their body and their mind, their home. Their effort manifests itself in a soaking lather, In the end, it's their integrity that matters. They sweat. They don't get tired. I've had many bumps and bruises in my life. And it seems the very minute I forget about them, I'm in an airport, a security checkpoint, and I'm questioned by a security guard. Sir, do you have any artificial hips or knees? A fair question. I don't. But what I do have are scars. And they remind me of the people that have kept me on my feet all of these years. My parents, my siblings, my teachers, my coaches, my friends, my mentors, my therapists, and Miss Karen Tanner. The funny thing is, years ago, the advice she gave was not even intended for me. As she said, John, if you want to regain your old form, you have to push yourself to the point of tears in therapy every single day. I have never forgotten her words. I never will. And I hope you don't either. Every day, minute, second, passing hour, you're going at it all right, hitting all your marks, morning, evening, and night. Through sweat, pain, torture, and agony, you bring the heat on the road to who you want to be. Every task on high alert, never bored. Your next set, that's your reward, because the new you you want to meet. And so from head to feet, you just keep bringing the heat. Forget yourself. No one will ever forget you. I don't know where or when I first heard this, but I know that when I did, I immediately thought of my mother. I have never met someone who's so selfish, selfless, and compassionate as she is. You name it, she can fix it. You name it, I can break it. She is the handiest person I know. She proved that selflessness is one of the most attractive human qualities, and compassion gives life its greatest significance. I thank God she is my mother. Thank you, Mom. At home, us four, and at work, many more. You and your nonstop motor. I appreciate you more now as I get older. Thank you, Jen. Back when I was student teaching, a colleague of mine named Jen watched a tape of me pitching during baseball in high school. You see, back then, when you put a baseball in my hand, I believed I could get anybody out, and I mean anybody. That might sound absurd, but that's the way I thought. That's the way I had to think, because if I didn't think that way, I'd get embarrassed. And I was not going to get embarrassed doing something I loved so much. Again, that might sound absurd, but that's only through the eyes and ears of people who believe they can't do the things that I do. Goals can be set, remember, and they can be adjusted. I see you working, man, so don't let your morale get busted. Truth of the matter is, I have never been able to take my teaching personality into the classroom. Why? Many reasons. But here's what I took from Jen's words. Do something in life, not only that you enjoy, but that allows you to be you as often as possible. Thank you, Dr. Parmalee. One of the last classes I took before obtaining my graduate degree was an educational law class. And our instructor, Dr. Janet Parmalee, was kind, compassionate toward her students. This class was very interesting and exciting, especially considering, again, it was one of the last classes I had to take before obtaining my degree. But again, it was Dr. Parmalee's words that have stuck with me to this day. Talking about a four-year period, she said, when you're 26, 4 years seems like a long time, but pretty much after that, 4 years becomes an eye blink in time. Again, thank you, Dr. Parmalee. As you rise, you unwrap another chance, a time again to adapt and advance. The sun rises and you're prepared. You can right your wrongs and right the unfair. You open the window, you look above and below. A voice in your head says, less show and more go. But the trees, the grass, and the light are anything but lame. So you play the waiting game. But as you look out the window and stand here alone, realize this, people. Whichever way you look, the window will soon close. Thank you, Aunt P. My Aunt P has had to endure more family heartbreak than most. How has she done it all these years? Losing her husband, her son, one of her daughters. She just looks straight ahead, and she's just flat out tough. What I write, I find true, but hard to believe. Often we are prone to judge simply by what we see. Looking closer with true eye exertion, I find the tougher the challenge, the more special the person. Many throw punches, but who are the ones 1,000 times they get hit? And after that last blow, fall right on their back. They look up, they get right back on track. Knockdowns, they have them in trillions, but they are married to a trait called resilience. They know as life comes and passes, they take great satisfaction out of rising from the ashes. Again, what I write, I find true, but hard to believe. Often we are prone to judge simply by what we see. But looking closer, with true eye exertion, I find the tougher the challenge, the more special the person. So how was Aunt P mended? Well, she stayed active. She skied well into her 70s. She plays golf and bowls with her high school buddies. And she has never lost touch with her lighter side. Dear Aunt P, tell me again, you lit off Chinese lanterns? Not one time, not two, but three? Don't tell me one hit the power lines. Don't tell me you have way bigger balls than mine. Don't tell me one fell in the seat of an officer. Don't tell me you went to court and you looked right at your daughter. Dear Aunt P, there's only one way to get these things solved. There's no use. You'll just do it again. But next time, don't get me involved. Thank you, Aunt P. Dear Mrs. Brockett, thank you. As you may have heard before, Mrs. Brockett was my 7th grade history teacher. She wore thick glasses and stood tall and was all about this word, integrity. And it was well known around school that she was a woman of integrity. She bestowed this upon her students. Ironically, it was me in that class, as you heard. I made the choice to walk out to quote-unquote use the boys' restroom instead of using this time to steal money out of a friend's locker to have lunch from the school cafeteria. But you can be sure that I know exactly what that word means today. It's 6:30 in the a.m., and the snooze has become my friend. Soon I see myself in the mirror. He looks back at me and says, have you done all you can do, and are you ready for what is to come? Are you thankful for all you have been given, as would say, decent son? Do you realize your responsibility that comes with the pleasure of success? You must be a man of integrity to always be at your best. And no matter there are no cameras, and that you're alone under this roof, you can hide sometimes from the outside world, but I always see the truth. Again, thank you, Mrs. Brockett. Thank you, Mrs. Fedler. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Miss Karen Tanner. Thank you, Dr. Parmalee. And thank you to the powerful woman in my life. My success is your success. And thank you to all who have listened. If you enjoyed what you heard, please fire me an email off my website, foxbeyer.com. FOXBEYER.com. I will gladly give you a copy of my book, Letter Kindling, Igniting, Inspiring, and Evoking the Fire Within. A lot of the poems you heard in that segment, Life as I Have Known It, come from that book. They have great illustrations, principally from a good buddy of mine, Stephen Whetstone. That's it from here. I will talk at you all later. Take good care. Tanya, back to you.